It's September 21st, 2021, and this is Markets Daily from CoinDesk. I'm Adam B. Levine here again with Adrian Bluss for your daily news roundup. On today's show, we're talking Bitcoin, traditional markets, plus a look at Ethereum's long-term game. This episode is sponsored by Kava, Nexo.io, and Bitstamp. And just a reminder, CoinDesk is a news source and does not provide investment advice. Bitcoin continues to take cues from equity markets amid macro uncertainty, seeming to contradict the popular narrative that the cryptocurrency is a safe haven like gold. The top token has bounced to $43,000 from the one-and-a-half-month low of $40,200 reached earlier today, with futures tied to the S&P 500 signaling a risk reset with a 1% gain. Major European stock indices are also trading higher alongside weakness in the safe haven U.S. dollar, despite lingering concerns about China's property market and its contagion risk for the global economy. Fears that the cash-strapped Chinese property giant Evergrande would default on its interest payments rocked global markets on Monday, sending Bitcoin, the S&P 500, and growth-sensitive risk assets lower. Evergrande hadn't made several due payments as of late Tuesday local time, a handful of anonymous sources told Bloomberg. Evergrande's chairman sent a letter to 125,000 employees on Monday, saying the company would soon, quote, walk out of the darkness. The company's real test lies ahead as an $83.5 million interest payment is due on Thursday, and another $47.5 million payment is due on September 29th. A default could bring another round of panic selling in risk assets. But for now, the market focus seems to have shifted to the two-day Federal Reserve meeting scheduled to begin later today. According to some observers, the central bank likely won't announce any plan to scale back asset purchases or signal for earlier rate hikes, given the possibility of a messy spillover of China's property market woes into the global economy. Bitcoin and risk assets in general will likely pick up a strong bid if the central bank pushes out taper plans to 2022. According to the chief market analyst at TrendSpider, $50,000 is the major resistance level to beat for the Bitcoin bulls. Quote, after a large move up over the summer months, Bitcoin has started to trade within a range between $43,000 and $50,000, they said in an email. Continuing the quote, until one of these levels breaks up or down, market participants should expect continued range-bound trading between these two support and resistance zones, end quote. According to Katie Stockton, founder and managing partner of Fairlead Strategies, the path of least resistance remains on the higher side, quote, the long-term uptrend still has a hold on Bitcoin, with our monthly indicators pointing higher, putting short-term volatility into a bullish context, Stockton said in a weekly research note published late Monday, continuing to say, quote, when the pullback matures, we will turn our attentions back to the recent peak of $52,900 as a minor hurdle to all-time highs, Stockton added. Currently, Bitcoin is oversold on intraday charts, which could encourage further upside towards the $47,000 resistance level. The Relative Strength Index, also known as the RSI on the 4-hour chart, is deeply oversold, which typically precedes a short-term price rise. Bitcoin is currently trading at $42,972. That's down 1.15% over the last 24 hours, while Ether is trading at $3,020 per token. That's up 0.3% over the same time period, according to the CoinDesk Price Index. Today's crypto coverage comes courtesy of CoinDesk's markets analysts, Dominic Dantes, Omkar Godbole, and a hat tip to Zero Hedge. Shifting to traditional markets, stock futures rose Tuesday, suggesting we're poised to rebound a day after concerns about China's property sector helped fuel a global sell-off in stocks and commodities. Futures tied to the S&P 500 rose 0.9%, suggesting the broad index would halt a three-day run of declines after the opening bell. Blue-chip Dow Jones Industrial Average futures rose 1%, while futures on the tech-heavy NASDAQ 100 added 0.8%. Meanwhile, in Europe, the region-wide Stoxx 600 benchmark gained 1.1%, London's FTSE 100 gained 1.2% as shares of traditional miners whose fortunes are pegged to Chinese iron ore demand recovered some losses from the previous session. In Asia, Hong Kong's flagship Hang Seng Index fell as much as 1.3%, but quickly recouped most of those losses and rose half a percentage point by the close of trading. Today's traditional markets coverage draws from the Wall Street Journal and the Financial Times. Stay tuned for after the break, and we'll take a deep look at some of the challenges faced by users of the Ethereum blockchain and how it's solving them, one block at a time. Back in a minute.
Kava gives you the ability to earn more by connecting the world's largest cryptocurrencies, ecosystems, and financial applications on DeFi's most trusted, scalable, and secure earning platform. Kava is an institutional-grade cross-chain engine built to scale on the largest decentralized proof-of-stake network. With loan APYs as low as 0% and reward APYs as high as 200%, Kava is the safest place for you to grow your digital portfolio. Mint stablecoins, lend, borrow, earn, and swap safely across the world's biggest crypto assets with Kava. To learn more, visit kava.io/marketsdaily. Looking to make the most of your crypto assets? Nexo.io's got you covered. Grow your wealth securely with Nexo's high-yield interest accounts. Buy crypto on your terms, directly within Nexo's platform, and start earning daily compounding interest right away. Get the cash you need without selling your crypto from just 6.9% APR. Instantly swap between 100 crypto and traditional currency pairs. And don't worry, Nexo is insured against losses up to $375 million. Get the most of your crypto at nexo.io. That's nexo.io. Secure, regulated, and reliable, Bitstamp is the cryptocurrency exchange of choice for more than 4 million investors and traders worldwide. Since 2011, Bitstamp has been a trailblazer in security, head of the class in personal customer service, and dedicated to making buying crypto fast and easy. Whether you are investing on our desktop platform and mobile app or trading on our speedy APIs, Bitstamp gives you all the tools you need to reach your crypto goals. Visit bitstamp.net to learn more. Bitstamp, for all the ways we crypto.
Today's featured story is an opinion piece from CoinDesk columnist and partner at Castle Island Ventures, Nick Carter. In early August, Ethereum's long-awaited London upgrade went into effect. It contained a package of Ethereum Improvement Proposals, or EIPs. The most consequential of these was EIP 1559, which changed the core fee logic. Prior to that change, Ethereum's blockchain was auctioned off on a first-price basis. Effectively, users would have to make an educated guess regarding the likely clearing price for block space. For the sake of guaranteed inclusion, they'd often end up overpaying. That was seen as inefficient. And thus, EIP 1559 was proposed. Every transaction in a block would pay the same price. The objective was to simplify fee logic, especially for blockchain developers, increase predictability, and reduce the variance of gas prices. Based on the data we have so far, this looks like it worked. Fees are indeed less volatile than they were before. They are, however, no cheaper, to the chagrin of some users. Ethereans close to the process insist that the tweak was never intended to cheapen block space. Insiders blame the surge in fees mostly on non-fungible token mania, and indeed a cursory analysis lends some support to that theory. The latest surge of NFT enthusiasm happened to coincide with the rollout of EIP 1559, so we won't be able to tease apart the causality until after the NFT episode subsides. Early analysis supports the idea that EIP 1559 has instituted a de facto near-term price floor on the price of gas, effectively eliminating periods of downtime, typically at night or on the weekends when block space was cheaper. Based on visualizations of gas price post EIP 1559 created by data scientists Taken's theorem, it looks like the change eliminated much of the downside volatility in gas prices, but did not eliminate the spikes. Extreme fee spikes during periods of congestion still happen. Removing those cheap periods of fees during downtime disempowered users who would set low limit orders on gas and were happy to wait for it to clear. Effectively, this change homogenized the way users had to bid on gas, pricing out those who were price sensitive and preferred to wait for low gas prices. And then there's the fee burning. The base fees are now burned, while miners collect some residual tips. This mechanism was included for a couple of reasons. First of all, to privilege Ether as the sole native currency of Ethereum, similar to the manner in which only US dollars can exchange a tax liability in the US. Additionally, it eliminates the attack mode in which miners might stuff blocks with high fee transactions to bid up the clearing price of gas and force users to pay extortionate fees. This fee recycling attack doesn't work when the base fees are burned. But the fee-burning design choice has economic consequences too. For one, it disadvantages miners, stripping away a good chunk of the revenue they were previously earning. As a consequence of the change, only about a quarter of the fees users pay to access the blockchain today go to miners. Previously, they earned them all. The remainder are burned, effectively constituting an ongoing stock buyback and retirement. This has amounted to more than 300,000 Ether burned in the first 41 days after the change, representing a reduction of 2.3% of supply on an annualized basis. During the days of high usage, the fee burn has fully sterilized the normal issuance associated with the protocol. In other words, the burn was sufficient to fully offset any new inflation. If you look at charts on the topic, it's clear that miners have seen their fee revenue dramatically reduced, with the majority of fees being burned instead. So the change has reallocated a continuous flow of economic rewards from miners, who eked out a living competing in the thin margin game, to the existing holders of Ether. By burning the fees, Ethereum has also decreased its expenditure on security. While Ether appears to be secure, reorganizations on smaller proof-of-work blockchains aren't unheard of. Ethereum is likely just fine at this level of security spending, but it's not worth fully discounting the service that the miners perform. Their job is to create valid, linear block space with no forks. Decrease the wages paid to the mercenary army that defends your terrain, and it can more easily be paid off by an attacker. There's a point where further decreasing miner revenue would put Ethereum at risk, but granted, it's probably at a much lower threshold. Ethereum insiders are well aware of the effects of this policy on miners, and indeed, disempowering miners has long been on their agenda. Miners don't feature in the long-term plans for Vitalik and company. In the fully proof-of-stake future that Ethereum is haltingly progressing towards, miners won't have any role at all. Thus, their interests are not often considered when protocol changes are concerned. They're just near-term contractors and will eventually be discarded. There's a few problems with that. If you treat miners as expendable, they won't maintain a duty of care towards the blockchain. For now, miners still occupy a privileged position in the transactional lifecycle, as they control the ordering of transactions in a block. It's well known that reordering, or selectively including or omitting transactions, offers economic rewards to the entities that control transaction selection. Some miners have delayed taking advantage of this so-called miner extractable value, or MEV, which is hostile to end users out of principle. But now that they're being squeezed out, they have no reason to seek to maximize the long-term value of the protocol. Indeed, especially as their fee revenues have been dramatically reduced, they're incentivized to seek revenue any way they can, even if it comes at the expense of users. Less direct protocol revenue could mean more MEV-based revenue and more exploitation of end users. The more serious problem with the fee logic change is that it pits token holders against block-space consumers. Holders now directly benefit from sustained high fees. The higher fees are, the more units of Ether are retired. This is likely good for the unit price of ETH. However, it comes at the expense of actual users of the blockchain, who, of course, prefer lower fees. In a world where token holders are users, and vice versa, this isn't a problem. But as Ethereum matures and seeks to attract mainstream corporate users, who may seek to simply transact rather than to hold, this apparently extractive relationship with transactors could well make it a tough sell. The analogy I draw here would be an electric utility company raising prices for its consumers to buy back its shares. The best evidence that Ethereum has entered a new phase of life, from scrappy upstart to a mature protocol now extracting rents from consumers of block space, for virtually its entire history, the two variables have moved in tandem. That stands to reason. More usage meant more demand for Ether itself. But since July, the relationship is decoupled. Monthly actives have steadily declined, but Ether has rallied strongly. Much of that rally is attributable to hype around EIP-1559 and the subsequent high rate of burnt fees. But one wonders how long the rally can last if the fee burning paired with high fees comes to antagonize large consumers of block space. Even if EIP-1559 isn't directly responsible for high fees, it's hard to argue that the Ethereum insiders who make these decisions and own significant quantities of ETH are particularly upset about the fees, as they now financially benefit from the more deflationary environment that the change has brought about. If you are a large consumer of block space, you may bristle at the fact that your fees are not paying for security, but are instead being redirected to token holders. This could come to a head in a future conflict over, say, block size. I can easily imagine a faction of transactors lobbying for a higher block size in an attempt to create more block space and push down the clearing price of gas. But will large token holders, benefiting from the deflationary effect of the high fees, want to reduce the size of this user-financed stipend? The fact is, due to the fee-burning mechanic, which has clearly been quite good for the price of Ether, the individuals in control of Ethereum protocol design now have a meaningful incentive to keep fees permanently high. The arbitrary change to the monetary policy is both short-termist and dangerous in terms of precedent setting. It's short-termist in that it disempowers transactors, upon whom the entire investment case for Ether is built. If you can't attract firms and users to hold Ether as working capital for transacting, that source of reservation demand will ebb away. Speculators are ultimately guessing that the protocol will see sustained future usage. The value of Ether is at partly the discounted future expectations of token holders contingent on future adoption. For those expectations to materialize, they will have to continue to persuade users that Ethereum is a stable and non-rent-seeking transactional venue. It also sets a troubling precedent. Sure, the price rallied in anticipation of the change, and a good number of ETH have been burned, but the decision is no less arbitrary. Sound monetary policy is about setting monetary rules that cannot be interfered with, creating superhuman institutions that are indifferent to short-term political pressures. That was the objective of the gold standard, an institution that governed for hundreds of years. Ethereum thus far hasn't been able to commit to a stable monetary rule. If the issuance can be dialed down after a few mere months of discussion by insiders, the throttle can be opened up again at a later date. Ethereum's policymakers should consider committing to a rule that will guide policy for decades, not months. And given that this policy is redistributive, One wonders what Protocol insiders will do next. Certainly, there is an unacknowledged political tinge to all these decisions that are represented as merely engineering choices. Against this backdrop, Ethereum killers have thrived. Alternative platforms like Algorand, Avalanche, Near, and Solana promote themselves on the basis of low fees and fast transactions. Of course, they make possibly unacceptable decentralization trade-offs to get there, and these blockchains are not without their own issues. But their case for an alternative is easier to make if the incumbent smart contract protocol is charging extremely high fees. $500, for instance, for a single Uniswap transfer is not uncommon, and arguably extracting rent in the process. In an environment in which stablecoins are highly portable across chains and investors are eager to finance wallets, infrastructure, and decentralized finance applications on novel blockchains, liquidity is less of a moat. It's never been easier for large consumers of block space to move their affairs to a new protocol. The fee pressure on Ethereum, which large token holders now perversely benefit from, could well push transactors to seek greener pastures elsewhere. Why choose to transact on a blockchain where you will inevitably face high fees, thus enriching insiders with the burn mechanic, when you could just find another blockchain with cheap or even subsidized block space? EIP-1559 may well have been sound engineering in terms of meeting its core objectives of reducing the variance in block space pricing. However, its largely unacknowledged externality, the redistribution of fees from miners to token holders, is troublesome. First, it's an arbitrary decision made by a small number of insiders, and it affects the core economics of the protocol. Second, it compromises the monetary credibility of the network and resets the monetary Lindy clock to zero. If issuance can be engineered downwards, it can be raised later on. EIP-1559 also antagonizes miners, who still occupy an important position in the network, and are now less disposed towards being fair stewards of the protocol. And lastly, it puts the interests of large token holders against those of current and future block space consumers. This could well harm Ethereum in the long run, if its alternatives are able to better align incentives and gain traction. And that's our show for today. Thank you very much for listening. This episode is edited by Adrian Blust, and you can send us an email at podcast@coindesk.com or leave us a review on your favorite podcast player. We'll be back tomorrow with another news roundup. And just a reminder that CoinDesk is a news source and does not provide investment advice. Thanks for listening.